Welcome to a special edition of the Bioethics Channel, a series examining the implications of the Supreme Court ruling on the Affordable Care Act in late June 2012. Joining us now is the Executive Vice President of the American Academy of Family Physicians, Dr. Douglas Henley. Dr. Henley, it's been almost 2 months now since the court ruling. Do we know anything more now about how the Affordable Care Act will influence family physicians and the care of their patients?
Well, I think with the Supreme Court decision out of the way, it has created a degree of certainty at this point in time that the law will continue to be implemented as we had hoped would be the case. The Affordable Care Act, the health reform law, whichever term you wish to use, we believe is good for the American people because it importantly expands healthcare coverage to at least another 30 to 40 million people, which has been a policy of the Academy for many years. And it's also important to emphasizing the foundational nature of primary care and family medicine to a better healthcare system. We know the healthcare enterprise that we have in this country today does not deliver on the quality and cost efficiency of care that it could to the American people. And one large reason for that is that it is not a healthcare system that is based in primary care and family medicine. The health reform law will begin to move us in that direction. So we are certainly urging our members to and informing our members, the Family Physicians of America, as to what the implications of the implementation of the law are and how that will be beneficial to them and their patients going forward.
So the idea is that more people will have insurance, more people will be going to the doctor. Do we have enough doctors?
Yeah, the answer is yes and no. That may seem a bit strange to say it that way, but there's no question. The no part is there's no question that at least as it relates to primary care physicians, we need more primary care physicians. There is a projected shortage between now and 2025. As well as a shortage of some other specialties such as psychiatry and general surgery and a few others. So, yes, we do need more primary care physicians. At the same time, however, the family physicians of this country and all primary care physicians are working hard to redesign their current practice model around what's called the patient-centered medical home, which in one key component of that is more team-based care. So we also believe that there is kind of an inherent capacity within the current system that if primary care physicians, family doctors begin to work better in teams comprised of nurses and nurse practitioners and physician's assistants and other healthcare providers within the practice setting, that there could be an inherent increased capacity of seeing more patients more efficiently than is the case today. So, yes, we need more primary care physicians, more family doctors, no question about it. But at the same time, we believe there's some capacity issues that can be dealt with within the current context by implementing more team-based care.
The bottom line, though, is that the Affordable Care Act has provisions to strengthen primary care workforce and infrastructure with investments in things like the Health Care Workforce Commission and other aspects of the law.
It does. Unfortunately, the Workforce Commission that you mentioned certainly was approved in the law, but money was not appropriated by Congress to support that Workforce Commission. We believe that's very important. It's not very expensive if they were to appropriate monies. But this nation, believe it or not, despite the fact that it spends billions of dollars on graduate medical education, which is residency training after medical school, and obviously provides lots of other types of governmental funding to medical schools and so forth to support the training of physicians, has never had an official workforce policy. And the whole nature and purpose of the Workforce Commission from the health reform law was to begin to try to make better estimates and judgments about the types of physicians we need to be training and what specialties they represent. So again, hopefully the Workforce Commission will ultimately get funded. There are certainly other provisions of the health reform law that are very favorable to primary care. There's several areas of focus on the patient-centered medical home that I mentioned earlier in terms of different payment models that would better incentivize that type of improved primary care, particularly that which is team-based and so forth, as well as the primary care incentive program, and soon, starting next year, the payment equality between Medicaid and Medicare, which would be significant increased reimbursement for primary care in many states, because as most people know, Medicaid reimbursement at the primary care level is quite low, even compared to Medicare in the current context. So there are many, these and many other aspects of the health reform legislation are favorable to primary care, but many of them are short-lived in terms of just existing through 2015 or just for a couple of years here and there. So we're certainly going to continue to and want to work with Congress to extend those payment policies that are favorable treatment to primary care for a much longer period of time.
It seems health care reform law is already affecting how and where family physicians may practice. I'm seeing reports on how hospitals are buying more physician practices to control referral sources and things like that. Talk about that, where it seems like it's already starting to have an impact on the marketplace, especially on where family physicians may practice.
Well, what you're referring to is kind of the consolidation of the healthcare marketplace, if we want to refer to it that way, in terms of trying to increase market share and to integrate care along what was called in the health reform legislation as accountable care organizations, which are nothing more than just a different name for integrated systems of delivering care, hopefully and preferably at the community level. So we are seeing health systems, hospitals, larger physician groups, whatever the case may be, integrating primary care physicians into those systems, sometimes through a purchase their practice or through a merger, whatever the case may be. It's not just hospitals, but other larger healthcare systems, and again, in several cases, larger physician groups that are aggregating together and integrating together as well. That presents its challenges as well as its opportunities, certainly for an average family physician practice of say, 3 to 5 family doctors in a practice that can represent more stability to the business aspects of their practice and, as well as to their income. But at the same time, it certainly has the potential to remove some degree of autonomy and decision making at the local level. So our members of the family physicians will just have to decide, you know, what is best for them in a given community or in a given circumstance. What we don't want to have happen is that accountable care organizations or integrated health systems, we don't want them to turn out to be the, you know, old wine in a new bottle. You know, we tried a lot of system integration back in the late 80s and early 90s during the managed care days, and that just became more about managing cost and ultimately monopoly, and those fell apart. So today, if we do this right and the focus is on the community, we would suggest that if there's a governance model that's not just about hospital people and not just about doctors, but a governance model that focuses on the community that includes, you know, teachers and consumers and employers and others besides just, you know, representatives of the hospital system or just representatives of physicians, that those will be integrated health systems that do in fact address the health care needs of a community, but also begin to address the health of the community as a population.
According to an AAFP statement, much work still lies ahead, including a permanent replacement for the sustainable growth rate formula, meaningful medical liability reform. Those are two big issues.
They're two huge issues. The SGR, the sustainable growth rate growth rate issue. It has been around now since 1997. It has nothing to do with the health reform legislation, but it's a formula that was enacted by Congress back then that has turned out to generate a situation where to fix the SGR would cost in excess of $300 billion. But without that fix, by January 1st of 2013, there'll be a 27% decrease in physician fees within the Medicare program, all physicians, not just family doctors, and not just primary care. And so that cliff is ever present, and Congress needs to address it. The way they've addressed that most, you know, within the last 10 years has simply been to kick the can down the road and provide an update of either 0% or a slight positive update only for a period of 6 to 12 to 18 months. That's just not a sustainable methodology of being reimbursed for small businesses, which most physician practices are, for any length of time. So it really represents a significant problem for Medicare beneficiaries, because if those cuts were to occur, many physicians would have to make the difficult choice: do they continue to see their current Medicare patients, much less do they accept new Medicare patients into their practices? And 27% cut in your reimbursement could be extremely substantial.
What's the best case scenario for family practice physicians and their patients, considering all of the unknowns about the Affordable Care Act with an election coming up?
Well, we believe that there is an abundance of data that shows at the primary care level, particularly in the context of the patient-centered medical home, this redesigned model of primary care that I've spoken about earlier in this conversation, that within the current amount of total dollars that we're spending on healthcare in this country, some $2.7 trillion in both the private and public sector, that there is enough unnecessary care in the system whereby you can pay primary care physicians, family doctors differently and better within the context of the patient-centered medical home, so that primary care will survive and thrive in terms of providing a better foundation to a healthcare system that delivers on improved quality and better cost efficiency of care. But the total cost of care per individual does not have to go up. That will mean that ultimately better management at the primary care level of all patients, but especially those with one or more chronic medical conditions those with special health care needs, even preventive care, that better management of that at the primary care level will save a lot of money in the long run to our overall health care enterprise, will improve the quality of care, and will improve patient and physician satisfaction. And we've got with the healthcare system. And we've got, there's an abundance of data to show that in fact does happen when you better incentivize primary care. For example, just one small example. I mentioned earlier the primary care incentive program that was given to primary care through the Affordable Care Act, a 10% bonus in Medicare for primary care physicians. The Commonwealth Fund did a study on that and showed that if Congress were to make that permanent, it's set to expire at the end of 2015. If Congress were to make that permanent, the ROI is there would be $6 saved in Medicare for every $1 spent on that primary care incentive program of only 10%, only a 10% bonus for primary care above and beyond their usual reimbursement, whatever that may be. So that's just one example of the cost efficiency of primary care, but yet at the same time, improved quality.
Dr. Douglas Henley is the Executive Vice President of the American Academy of Family Physicians. Thanks for your time, Dr. Henley, and good luck.
Thank you very much.
I'm Laurel LeBoux. Thanks for listening to the BioEpics Channel.